So this is the last lecture of this quantum matter course. So the plan is that I will give you some idea about the research that I'm doing. So, and you will see that actually the things that you have learned in this course indeed is very closely related to the research that we are doing right now. So, and what I'm going to talk about is what we call fuzzy sphere regularization of 3D CFT. So indeed, it's really closely connected to, for example, the 1 plus 1D Ising model, the conformed field theory that I talked about. And also, I think in the tutorial, you also learned what is lambda levels and so on, right? That's closely aligned with today's topic. So that's first just recap a little bit about the story of conformal symmetry or conformal field theories. And I won't go to I won't really give you too much details about conformal field theories, but just want to remind you one crucial thing is what we called state operator correspondence. I think in one of the homework that you you had, it's you also studied this. It's about this state operator correspondence of 1 plus 1D transverse Ising chain. So, and the key is that we want to study some, we want to study the system, put the system on some sphere geometry such that we can easily see the conformal symmetry. So, and one thing that we want to know is the conformal generators. So they are just the generators of the conformal group SO D plus 1, comma 1, right? So yeah, I think it should be, So and we can write down the generators of this conformal group. One is what we called translation symmetry. And we usually write it as P mu. It's literally just partial mu. And we have the usual rotation symmetry. Which you can write it as m nu nu, and it's x mu partial nu minus x nu partial mu, right? And the third thing is the dilatation generator, which corresponds to the scaling symmetry. Dilatation. And we usually write it as D, and it's x mu partial mu, right? And the last one is the special conformal transformation. And we sometimes call it SCT. And it has a bit more complicated form that is k mu to x mu times x nu partial nu and minus x squared partial mu. Right? That's the four generators of the conformal group. And then the next thing is that we can compute the commutation relations of those generators. And then that gives us a good idea about how to think about what conformal symmetry is, in particular in this context of state operator correspondence. So for example, you can find that the rotation actually commutes with dilatation, right? That is very intuitive to understand, right? And also you can compute the correlation commutator between dilatation and translation. You will find it similar as the commutation of density and let's say annihilation or creation operator. That's also same for the that's the key commutation relations that we want to use. And then another thing is that what we want to do is that we want to put the system on the sphere, and then we will see how those generators and their commutations would be manifest. So we'll study a quantum Hamiltonian. We call it H on a sphere SD minus one, right?
You can think about the eigenstate and also energy spectrums of that quantum Hamiltonian.
So, for example, you can consider, let's say, 1D chain, right? That's we already talked about. Right? Let's say a 1D chain. We put it on a circle and then have radius r. And you can also, and today what we are would really consider is a sphere, where let's say S2, and then you consider, let's say, sphere has a radius r, right? So the idea of radial quantization generally is applicable to CFTs and any dimensions. Okay, and have this quantum Hamiltonian defined on sphere, and then we can start to think about its eigenstate. The first thing is the ground state. Let's say we call ground state at zero. And then we can always shift the Hamiltonian with a constant such that we make the ground state have zero energy, right? And then for CFT on sphere, a nice property is that this Hamiltonian, once you shift it it has zero energy at ground state, and you rescale it properly, the Hamiltonian will become a dilatation operator times sphere radius, right? Before I have explained why this is a case, so I won't go over it again, but remind you that this is very key property, and then the rotation symmetry, right? Mu nu just will act is the rotation of sphere, right? So for 1D, this rotation symmetry was really just sometimes you call it translation in 1D, but in this context would like to call it rotation, right? For 2D sphere, then this rotation is really just the SO3 rotation of this S2, right? So since this rotation generator and dilatation generator commutes, right? So then what we can do is that we just label each eigenstate of my Hamiltonian according to their quantum numbers, their energies, and their rotation quantum number, right? So we can ask what is the consequence of, those two commutators. And then we can do
So for example, this commutator really just becomes like R times, oh, sorry, I think I, yeah, it should be R o, D over R, sorry about that. So so then you consider the commutator of R times your Hamiltonian and P mu, then you get P mu. That means, that actually means that you can use P mu to generate states, right? Because for any state, let's say we call it phi, let's say it has energies like delta over R, right? And this delta is the scaling dimension of the the operator that corresponds to this state. And then you can use P mu x on phi. And due to this commutation relation, you can show that this new state is also an eigenstate of my Hamiltonian. And its energy will be delta plus 1 over R. Right, and similarly, you can also ask what is the consequence of the SCT. And very similarly, you can show that this when you apply K mu to phi, it will still get an eigenstate, but with energy whose energy will now be delta minus 1 over R. Right. So then the idea is that the consequence of conformal symmetry here will be just that you will get, for each state phi, you can use k mu and p mu and k mu as an operator that generates infinite number of eigenstate of the Hamiltonian. And another feature of that is that the energy of those states being generated follows a very rigid structure, right? That is, their energies will be just differ by integers once you get rid of this radius factor, right? So you can say that indeed those states form some representation of your of our conformal group, right? That is a consequence of, so that is a manifestation of the conformal symmetry on this sphere geometry. All right, and another important property is that it's what we called, we can organize those states as primary state and descendant state. The primary state is defined as, the primary is defined as a state that is annihilated by the SCT generator. The reason that you will get primary state because the energy is lower bounded, right? So you start with arbitrary eigenstate and you keep on applying K mu, and eventually you cannot go to infinity, minus infinity, right? So it has to be has to stop somewhere, and the way that it gets stopped is that at some point when you apply a SCT generator to your state, you will just get zero, right? And those states are called primary state. And a very important property of those of CFT is that they are indeed infinite number of primary state, right? So that also makes it very, very challenging to really solve CFTs analytically. In 1 plus 1D, for example, in this transverse Ising chain, there is another, so the conformal symmetry gets enhanced, right? So here I'm only right four conformal generators, but in 1 plus 1D, the conformal symmetry actually becomes infinite dimensional. There are infinite number of generators you can write down. Those are called Virasoro generators. And then use Virasoro generators. The story there is very similar, where you consider the commutators of those generators, and then you can use those generators to generate states, and so on. And you can define primaries, and so on. And the nice thing there is that for certain 1 plus 1 DCFT, like transverse Ising, it turns out that there are only like a finite number of Virasoro primary. And then using that, you can solve 1 plus 1 DCFT. So for higher dimensions, in general, we don't have that structure. But still, we can understand, we have this conformal symmetry, this global conformal symmetry, which is already powerful enough. For example, once you have your CFT put on a sphere, then you can easily make use of this conformal symmetry to get a lot of informations of of that CFT, right? For example, you can easily get scaling dimensions by just computing its energies, right? So in the homework, you have already done this for transverse Ising model on a circle. And now in this lecture, I will explain how do we do this for 3D CFT that we put it on a sphere. So. Yeah.
Another question. Why isn't the Hamiltonian the generator of time translations?
Yeah, that's
the dilation.
Yeah. So that the dilatation is so this comes from the what we call the Weyl transformation. So usually when you consider a CFT, the good starting place is that you consider some classical system, right? Like classical Ising or in quantum field theory, that's a quantum field theory defined in a Euclidean. And then you can consider let's say now we start to, let's say, foliate my space using with spheres. Let's say that's SD minus one, and this is my radial direction. And in this geometry, the dilatation really just the symmetry that rescale my radius of sphere, right? So, but that's the classical case. Now, if you want to consider the quantum case, what we do is that you do a what we call Weyl transformation, which is also a conformal transformation that you transform it to this what we call the cylinder geometry. Precisely, is what we are studying here, and then so the transformation looks like just. Like this, I think. Right. So then that maps this radial direction to the time direction here. Right. So that's how the dilatation becomes the time translation. Yeah. So now, we want to study a quantum Hamiltonian sphere that realizes CFTs. The key is that we want to, so first of all, we want to have a quantum mechanical model, right? Quantum mechanical model that realizes CFTs. Right, so like transverse Ising model that we know it can realize Ising CFTs. So we also want to study some version of quantum mechanical model. And then we put this quantum mechanical model on sphere, right? For 1 plus 1D, we just put it on a circle, while for 2 plus 1D, we have to put it on a two sphere, right? And the third thing is that we want the model have
has finite dimensional Hilbert space. Such that we can, for example, we can put it in the computer and compute its eigenstate, eigenenergies, and so on, right? So and lattice model is one such model, such class of models that have those properties, right? And here, what we have, what we will consider is what we call a fuzzy sphere model, which can be another, which is another class of models that achieve the goal. So roughly speaking, our model will be consider electrons moves in a two-dimensional space in the presence of a B field, a magnetic field. So that is precisely the what we call lambda level problem. That let's say you, the simplest version is that you just consider a 2D flat plane, and then you have a magnetic field perpendicular to your plane, and then you have electrons moving in this two-dimensional plane, right? So, so clearly this is a quantum mechanical model, right? And later you will say that it's also satisfied, let's say it has finite dimensional Hilbert space, then we can really play with it, pretty much like we how we deal with lattice models. So, and now let's say a little bit about lambda levels. You already have it in the tutorial, so I won't solve it again. But let me make a number of comment, and then I will put it on the sphere and explain how things work there. So a very interesting property of lambda levels is that actually it's closely related to what we call a non-commutative geometry. So let me first remind you what's the solutions of lambda levels, right? The first thing is that it has quantized energy, right? And more precisely, the energy will be, let's say, B over M. M is my mass of my electrons, times N plus 1/2, right? You will get a quantized lambda levels, which you can draw, for example, like this. And each lambda levels will be completely flat, right? And you can label those lambda levels as first lambda level, second lambda level, and so on. And each lambda level will have this energy. And a key property is that it's complete flat. Right. There's no dispersion on each lambda level, right? And the third thing is that there will be a massive degeneracy. At each level. And the number of degeneracies will really just be, let's say, A is my area of my, two-dimensional space. And that's then B times A is really just the flux that I have in the system. And then the degeneracy of each lambda levels with just the number of the flux that I have, right? So then, So then it's very similar to the lattice model that, let's say, if you increase the size, the area of your 2D two-dimensional space, then you will get more and more states at each lambda levels. So and I believe you have already solved the lambda levels in flat space, and what does the solution look like. So and a key that I want to explain a little bit is that how this lambda level problem actually relates to the what we call a non-commutative geometry. So you can think that let's say you can describe this system as the using Lagrangian, let's say just the kinetic term minus minimal coupling. Right, A is the vector potential corresponding to the magnetic field, right? And so you can write A as minus B over 2 epsilon ij x j. And if we consider limit that, let's say, we project the system down to the lowest lambda level, right? Or in other words, we restrict our system into a lowest lambda level, and then it will actually get the what we call a non-commutative geometry. So the way to say it is that because lambda level is completely flat, right? So if I restrict the system to the lowest lambda level, then this kinetic term will just becomes a constant, right? So effective Lagrangian will then just be just this minimal coupling dot A times A. And you can also write it as B over 2 epsilon ij dot I, dot I times j, right? So then just do a very simple canonical quantization. You will actually realize that, let's say, x1 is roughly, let's say, b. P2 and X2 is rough P1 over B, right? So that means the momentum gets locked with my coordinates, right? And then following the uncertainty principle, let's say the uncertainty principle actually will gives us that my coordinates stops commuting, and it will get a non-trivial commutator. That is what we called a non-commutative geometry. Right? So there are also other ways to say that why this momentum gets locked with your space. One way to say it is that just recall the solution of the lambda levels. Right. So remember, to solve the lambda levels, what you need to do is that first you need to choose a gauge, right? And once you choose a gauge, for example, you can choose the gauge that is translation invariant along the x direction, and then you'll find that the solutions of lambda levels were actually localized at different space, right? And each localized lambda level solutions will have a well-defined momentum, right? So that's indeed is another way to say that this coordinates gets locked with momentum, right? So so then in this lambda level problem, if you do this, if you restrict your system to the lowest lambda level, then you will get the non-commutative geometry. And that's also what we are going to do, that we will consider this this quantum mechanical problem, and we will restrict, we will consider the limit that that I project my system into a lowest number level, right? And this is always a valid procedure as long as the gap, right? The gap between those two lambda levels, which will be proportional to B over M, is much larger than my interactions. Right? If that's the case, then we can safely just project my system into a lowest number level, right? And this is indeed very close to the lattice model, right? Just take one step back, ask, right, where does those lattice model come from, right, in our materials, right? Because in materials, what we actually have are electrons moving in the continuous space, right? There's no, I mean, they are not restricted to move only on the lattice side, right? And then the reason that you can use the lattice model to approximate those materials and so on is because the actual model will be, let's say I have electrons move on in some periodic potentials, right? And those periodic potentials are created by the lattice, the crystal potentials in the materials. And then my electrons are moving in this continuous space, but then it will always favor to stay at those potential minimums, right? Although it can still, it still in principle can move to other places, but then if the potential is large enough, you can approximate, you can make an approximation that you just say that my electrons are sitting at those potential minimum, which are the lattice side, right? And then you can even write down the spin models that the spin comes from the electrons, and then that's how you get transverse Ising model, right? So then the philosophy here is very similar, that originally we have some quantum mechanical model in the continuous space, and that quantum mechanical model has some magnetic field, and then due to magnetic field, I get those quantized lambda levels, and as long as my magnetic field is strong enough such that I have a huge gap between my lowest lambda level and higher lambda levels, such that I can project the system down to the lowest lambda level, and then I get some quantum mechanical model defined on the lowest lambda level, right? And that's really very similar to the lattice models where you get it from the periodic potentials. Okay, so that is the lambda levels and non-commutative geometry. So and now what we want to do is that we want to put the system on a sphere. So the story is very similar, that so now I'm still now just put my two-dimensional space on a sphere instead of a flat space. And in the center of the sphere, I place a magnetic monopole there. So the monopole really just plays a role of the magnetic field, right? Because the monopole will give me magnetic field in the radial directions. So you can again solve this lambda level problem and in very similar fashion as the lambda levels in flat space. So again, you will get quantized. So for this monopole, let's say that its flux its charge is S, and so in other words, you can just compute the flux trapped it on the sphere, on the surface of sphere, and then you will find it to be 4 pi times s, and that due to the quantization of the monopoles, the s has to be either integer or half integer. Right? So z and also z plus 1/2. Right? So and then you solve this lambda level problem on sphere. Again, you will find you have the quantized energy for each lambda levels. And each lambda level will have, again, each lambda level will have certain degeneracy depends on the monopole flux. And this time also depends on the degeneracy depends on the which lambda levels you are in. So the degeneracy of each lambda level, let's say for each lambda level will be indeed 2 times n plus s plus 1. Right. N is the label of my lambda levels, s is a monopole flux. So and indeed, those states, the states in those lambda levels actually form a spin n plus s representations of SO3. SO3 is my sphere rotation, and back to the contact and connecting to the context of CFT, this SO3 is nothing but the rotation symmetry of my CFT, right? The sub group of CFT, right? And for the lowest lambda level, then it will just be the spin S representation, and its wave functions. The wave function of those lambda orbitals are called monopole harmonics. And the lowest of monopole harmonics is really just takes a very simple form. Let's say exponential I times m phi and cosine to the power s plus m and sine half theta to the power of s minus m, right? And here m runs from minus s to s, right? The m is really just a label of the states on the lowest lambda level, right? There are in total 2s plus 1 of them. So that is the lambda levels on the sphere, right? So now what we want to do is that we consider some quantum mechanical model in this setup, and then we project it to the lowest lambda level, right? That gives what we call a fuzzy sphere. So so now what we want to do is that we want to write down a model that realizes 2 plus 1D quantum Ising transitions on this on the sphere. So it would be good to first get some intuitions about what the model should look like, or what the system should look like. So we can start by asking what are the
So the Eisen transition describes a transition between ferromagnetic phase to a paramagnetic phase, right? So we can start by asking how should I think of paramagnet and ferromagnet in this system, right? On this lowest number level, right, you can think that the Hilbert space is built on those the state or the lambda orbitals, right, along lowest lambda level, right? So literally their wave functions looks like this. And those wave functions actually you can plot those wave functions. You will actually find them they are localized at a different latitude. But the solutions look typically like this, right? They're localized at different latitude, but they are extended in the other directions. That's the typical feature of lambda levels in any gauge or any geometry, right? And then pictorially, what you can think of is that at those latitude, I have some Hilbert space, right? For example, so here we consider electrons, right? So then you can think of that at each of those lambda orbitals, I can choose to put electrons there, or I can occupy this lambda this orbitals, I can choose not to occupy it, right? That is how the Hilbert space is built in. So then to realize, paramagnet or ferromagnet, what we want to do is that we want to have a spin for fermions, have a spin up fermion, spin down fermion, right? What we can do is that on each orbitals, I put one electrons at each orbitals, and then make their spin, pointing to up. And this is indeed correspond to a ferromagnet phase. So that corresponds to the ferromagnet phase, right? In this picture, it's very similar to a ferromagnet phase on a lattice system, right? Particularly if you think the lattice model and lattice spin model really comes from electrons, where you have some theoretical potential, and those theoretical potential will favor to trap electrons, right? And those electrons carry a actual spin for spin degree of freedom, and then if at each lattice side, there's precisely one electron with spin up, and then you realize it in the paramagnet phase, ferromagnet phase, right? And similarly, you can have the paramagnet phase, which is very similar. I will just draw it in a very sloppy way, that I have one particles at each those orbitals, and now this time my spins are pointing to the x directions. That is the paramagnet phase, right? And then the transition between those will correspond to the Eisen transitions. So this is this is very similar to the transverse Eisen model, where I can have those two state, and then I realize transition between them, right? So let's write down the model for realizing this transition. As now you can tell that what we are going to consider is some electrons carry a spin 1/2 degree of freedoms moving on the sphere. So it'd be good to first write down the real space Hamiltonian. I say that I consider Hamiltonian in real space on the sphere, and I have this usual, let's say, the first term is really just the connected term, right? Just describes the minimal coupling between my electrons and the gauge field, and this term gives me the yeah, I should also write to r squared. So this term indeed gives me the lambda levels on sphere, right? And then the next thing is that we want to consider some interactions. The interaction will be so the interaction plays the key role that realizes those phases and those phase transitions. So we can then write the interaction term in a very similar fashion as the transverse Ising model. Let's say I forgot to mention that those sides are really just a two-component object. Let's say it has spin up and spin down, right? Because I do want to have Ising transitions, I need some electrons carry this spin degree freedom. And then from this, you can indeed write the spin operators. You can write, let's say, you can write down a spin operator that's by inserting some Pauli matrix between psi dagger and psi, right? And then those Pauli matrix depends on which you choose, you get either sigma get spin z or sz or sx and so on, right? So on a lattice model, you can also play with this game, right? You just start with electrons and then you write down those spin operators and so on, right? Here it's very similar. And then we can start to write the Ising interactions. It's not hard to imagine that the Ising interactions will really just be things like nz a times nz rb, right? So this really just like the Ising interactions at different point, right? And this u will be some interaction potential you can choose. For example, you can choose it as delta potential, right? You can also choose it as Laplacian delta, and you can indeed choose any power of Laplacians, right? And yeah, as long as it's SO3 invariant. And again, to make connections with lattice model, you can think Laplacian as some on-site interactions, delta potential as some on-site interactions, and Laplacian delta is the next neighbor, nearest neighbor interactions, and the second power of Laplacian will be, let's say, the second neighbor interaction, and so on, right? So it's just some interaction form that you can choose. And then you can also add a transverse field term, right? Which then will tune through the transitions that can give us this paramagnetic phase, right? is really very similar to the 1+1D transverse Ising model, except that I'm considering on the sphere, right? And you can imagine that if this term is very strong, I will get paramagnetic phase. And if this term is very weak, then my Hamiltonian will be dominated by the Ising-Ising interactions. I will get the ferromagnet, right? That's that's roughly what the model look like. And then what we do is that I will consider the limit that I will project the system onto a lowest standard level. Yeah.
I have a question. So what is the expression for the gap the same on the spherical case? The flat case, it was B over M.
Yeah, it's roughly B over M.
Right. So when we say that B over M is greater than the interactions, here it has to be greater than the strength of the potential and the field.
Yeah.
So in this case, B is dependent on the radius of the sphere?
Yes, B depends on radius of sphere as well as the monopole flux.
Right. So we have something like S over R square is greater than the strength of B.
There's also a mass of electrons. Yeah. So then the trick, so then what we can play with is just a set mass to be very small, such that then the gap becomes large. Right. It's always an independent scale from the interactions. So that is the model on this to realize the Ising transitions. And remember that at the beginning, we want to have this story, we need the system to have finite dimensional Hilbert space, right? So if you just look at this model, right, Hilbert space is infinite dimensional, right? Because it's defined in a continuum, right? That's why you cannot really easily study Ising models on sphere, right? Because it doesn't give you a finite dimensional Hilbert space, and you cannot put lattice on sphere either, right? Because the sphere has a curvature, right? So and then that's why the Dunder level projection, the lowest Dunder level projection, plays a key role, right? It gives us a finite dimensional Hilbert space to play with. So, let me just quickly go through that how we do lowest Dunder level projection to get to the Hamiltonian. So, we start with this fermion operators on the sphere, right? And then the lowest standard level projection will then just correspond to here. I'm using a slightly different notation to label the coordinates on sphere. I'm using theta and phi, no longer this r. And then the lowest standard level projection will then just correspond to that I replace these operators defined in the real space as operators, fermion operators living on each lambda orbitals. Right. So this is lowest lambda level projection. Right. So remember that. Because this lambda level, right? If you consider all the lambda levels, it will be a complete basis. So then for any operators, you can expand it using all the states of lambda levels, right? By all the states, I mean the first, the second, and all the infinite number lambda levels. And now, due to this, condition that we consider the limit that the gap is much larger, the gap between lowest lambda level and higher lambda levels is much larger than my interactions, then I can just project the system to lowest lambda level, right? I just truncate this operator this expansion at the zeroth order, right? So that is a lowest lambda level projection. And then the game is very simple, that you can get the effective Hamiltonian for this guy, right? I don't have time to do all the computation for you, but let me just quickly show one thing is that, let's say, if I consider the this transverse field, right? Let me write it using spherical coordinates. Right, the transverse field and for this nx, I write as, so we can write it as, say, up m dagger, say, down m sigma x, up m, say, down m, and we have the two monopole harmonics. Yeah, should be M1 and M2. Right, and the sum over M1 and M2, right? I'm just insert this guy to this Hamiltonian term on sphere, right? And then I do the integral of spherical integral to get rid of this part. And in the end, you will get a term this. And indeed, you can easily guess such term because the Hamiltonian should be SO3 invariant. And that's the only SO3 invariant term you can write down. So, but anyway, it's very straightforward to translate any real space Hamiltonian like this to the Hamiltonian defined on this lowest number level, right? Then you get some Hamiltonian. For these four Fermion terms, you will get some much more complicated looking term, but in the end, you have a well-defined Hamiltonian such that you can study it, right? And then what you can do is that having this Hamiltonian by tuning H, you can realize those ferromagnetic phase and paramagnetic phase, and then in between you will get the this 2+1D Eisen transitions, and you can do the and then you can analyze its eigenspectrons to say this conformal symmetries. You can get pretty accurate scaling dimensions of those safety operators, even if you simulate a very small system size. And those computations will be very similar to this 1+1D Eisen models that you have already studied. All right, so I think I'm running out of time, so let me stop here.
Can this model method be used for long-range entangled phases?
Yeah. So like those topological ordered phase, like fractional quantum Hall state, right? So initially the
Landau levels are described.
Yeah. Initially, all those technique was invented by Duncan Houdin, and the motivation was really to study those topological ordered phase. So, any other question?
So, what is it that forces the model, the quantum model we choose to have fermions?
Because it's simpler to study.
the Hilbert space is much smaller, right? For bosons, then you can occupy, in principle, you can occupy infinite number of states, right? But for fermions, it's easier. Yeah.
But in principle, you could write down a similar model for the Ising CFT itself with bosons, charge bosons?
Yeah, in principle, yes.
Okay.
Right.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks.